Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So, Melanie, welcome back.
Thank you. I don't feel like I've been gone, but...
But you were gone for a week. Yes. We had someone substitute in your seat at your microphone. Isabella, our daughter, as if anyone who's listened last week knew, she substituted for you while you were on your leave, medical leave from the show. And she did a fine job. Got lots of compliments on her poise and her... what was the other word I was thinking? Poise and...
Demeanor.
Demeanor, yes. And how articulate she was. Her articulation. That's not right. But of course everyone wants to know, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm surviving.
Yeah. You're also boost your mic because you're sounding a little weak there. So for everyone to remind everyone, you had surgery a couple weeks ago.
I had an umbilical hernia repaired. It was fun. Not. Yeah. It's just day surgery, like as in you're in and out in a day, but it's not day surgery in the sense of like a simple procedure that you bounce back quickly from.
Well, that's the thing. Day surgery, it seems to almost implies simple, like easy, but day surgery, all that describes is how long it takes the doctors to do their work and how long you have to be under supervision, like in case something has gone wrong.
Yes, they let me out of the hospital within a few hours.
Right.
I was only there from like 7 until 3.
At latest 3. Yeah, probably
2 or 3, something
two,
like
I
that.
Like 2, I think 2 o'clock. I
can't anyway, it, yeah, but and I have a history of recovering more slowly from procedures than the doctors expect. The surgeon was like, you'll be feeling better by Sunday or Monday. No. And I said, that's really wonderfully optimistic of you, but 6 previous surgeries say that that's not the case with me.
Right. 5 C-sections in a previous operation of the same kind.
Yeah, my general track record is not bouncing back. So
now the last time you had the surgery, that this one was to fix the thing that didn't fix, was when we had the power outage 2 days later, right?
Yeah, at least this time we managed to not have a power outage. That was a plus. Yeah. It didn't have to go decamp to your sister's house.
Right. And have you spend the night in an ER? that was such a pain.
That was unpleasant. Yes.
And this doctor, the surgeon, seemed much more concerned with your recovery than the last one, including making sure you had enough painkiller.
Right. And calling me, that he called me the day after on a Saturday to see how I was doing, which I thought was really great. I've really been impressed with him. He's been very, very, very good bedside manner. But I still am taking forever to recover.
Right. It'll be another few weeks before you're probably up and around and at 'em.
Not so much up and at 'em.
Well,
but I mean, I sort of planned for it to be, planned for it to be a light week, in terms of the kids' schooling. Isabella, I went ahead and did her checklist a week ahead, and so that she has the, like, I made 2 weeks checklist ahead in advance, so I didn't have to do it while recovering from surgery. And everybody else is pretty much on autopilot. They're not doing like the maximum amount of stuff, but they're not doing the bare minimum either.
Right.
So yeah, we're tootling along. The kids have all been really, really great at helping with housework, doing laundry and dishes and helping with cooking and vacuuming and cleaning up and that sort of thing. And of course you've been doing the bulk of the cooking.
Right. So yeah, I've been cooking all the meals and doing the food shopping and doing some of the laundry. At least the first few days I was doing the laundry just so you didn't have to bend over the washing machine and bend into the dryer.
Of course, the kids can do all of that.
Yes.
The laundry. So
I've been getting them to do that. And they're doing some of the cleaning. Theoretically, the older girls were going to help with dinner, but it sort of turns out it's still more work to have them help than it is for me to just do it for some of the things. Like there are some things where I'm like, okay, go, you make rice, you make biscuits, like that sort of thing.
Right.
Where it's an independent subset, but where it's like I'm making pasta or I'm making, you know, soup, it really doesn't help to have them. Like, I mean, there was one night where I had like Sophie chopping things, but having to stand next to her and explain it didn't save me any time.
No, they're still in the learning stage rather than the independent working.
And I'm happy to teach them, but like right now while we're in this recovery phase is probably not the best time for that. So it's okay. But we're getting by. Thanksgiving is going to be interesting. We'll see how that goes. Just the timing of it, like to go food shopping. I just don't have time to go food shopping for the groceries for Thanksgiving. I went to the store with Bella last week, but to go again for this week. So I ended up doing an online order with a pickup. I have to go to the grocery store in the morning and pick up.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm really dubious because anytime we've ever done the pickup with like the shopper, there's always something messed up. They always like, oh, they grab the wrong thing. Like it's similar, but it's not the thing we want, or it's totally, totally not the thing we want. Like, why did you pick this item? It is not at all the thing that we asked for, that sort of stuff. So as long as we get a turkey that's big enough, I think we can work with everything else.
Right.
I have a feeling I'm going to be going to the grocery store late at night, and like on Tuesday night or something.
Probably.
In any case, so your recovery's coming along slowly, surely we'll get there, and we'll survive. That's how it goes. So just one other thing that's been going on. I for my birthday, I got an Amazon gift certificate, and I decided to get with it something that I've been had my eye on for a while. I picked up the Lego Apollo 11 Lunar Lander, which is Lego makes kits that are now aimed at adults, like creator kits. They have a lot more pieces. So this one had like over 1,000 pieces.
Adults or older teens.
Adults or older. Right, right. An older teen would be fine with it. And I was just, you know, for a long time I thought, oh, Legos are for kids, right? You know, I had Legos when I was a kid, although we didn't have kits like this when I was a kid. They had like blocks and they were just different blocks and you build things out of your imagination with them. And that was that. Now, you know, now they have the kits and things like that. And so for a long time, I thought they were for kids. And I've seen our kids, you know, build a million and one different sets. It seems like a million and one of them around the house. But what I realized was, I liked building models as a kid, you know, the planes that you glue and paint and,
mm-hmm.
and they don't really have that as much. I mean, you can find them out there. Like Revell was the name, like the kit building company. They actually are still around their website, but they have like three different models on their site. Like their product line is really small. I don't even know if they really make these anymore. But this is kind of like that, except without the glue or the paint.
Right.
You know, I mean, so it was so over the course of a couple of Sundays, I put it together, did it myself. The kids at first, they really wanted to help. Like they really wanted to like find the pieces and stuff. Like, no, I want to build this. This is my project. You can be here with me and watch me build it. And they would help by like, oh, you put the wrong thing there, which is fine. You know, that way I don't have to dismantle the thing after discovering it half hour later.
Right.
And then eventually they got to like sorting the pieces. So putting all the like pieces together.
Uh huh.
that's fine. I was fine with that. And it was fun. I enjoyed it. I liked the process of building it and putting it together and finding the pieces. And it was pleasant. And it was something that they enjoyed watching me do. And I enjoyed having them, you know, being there with me. So I think I might, you know, do some more in the future. The downside is they're not cheap, the sets.
Right.
So like this one was like $100, and there's a Saturn V rocket that looks really cool, and it's about the same amount of money. So I'm not going to be doing this very often.
Yeah.
I've heard that there are places that rent sets. Like you can rent out the set, build it, and when you're done, you just take it apart and bring it back.
Okay.
I think Father Roderick does that. But
are there places that do that around here?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they do.
Uh-huh.
So, but, you know, it's fun. So in the course of the last few weeks, like I mentioned, I've been doing the cooking. And but before that, you were able to make a dish that you really enjoy and that you only really make once a year at most, which was the pumpkin risotto.
Right. I think I did that like the day before my surgery.
Yeah.
Like sort of a last hurrah, which really was more about. So it requires two ingredients that are a little bit hard to find. It requires pumpkins and leeks. And I had got the pumpkin at the farmer's market like a few weeks before that. But the farmer's market, nobody had leeks. And then I forgot to get them at the grocery store. And then I finally, like, I saw them at the grocery store and I bought them. And then realized, wait, I've got to basically make this tomorrow night. Or because Dom's not going to make it while I'm recovering from surgery.
Right. I had said that if I were going to make risotto, I was going to make mushroom risotto, but that's a whole different thing.
Right. So this is, it's a spicy pumpkin leek risotto. And so you saute your leeks and your pumpkin until they're really soft. And then it uses like a hot Aleppo pepper to add some spicy kick. And then you make it like traditional risotto. You stir in the rice and you coat it with the oil, and then you add chicken stock slowly until it's nice and thick and
right.
creamy.
Until they're tender. The rice.
Oh, yeah. And it has white wine in there, too.
Yeah.
And then you add cheese. I think it's supposed to have cilantro in it, which I forgot to add, which would have been a nice additional flavor. But I didn't make it as spicy this time because I thought the kids might possibly like it, and they did not. So no. I could have made it as spicy as I wanted. That's really actually one of my favorite parts is like really spicy. The combination of spicy and creamy is really nice.
Hmm.
Anyway.
It's out of that cookbook with the hot foods, the spicy
Mediterranean
foods?
Hot.
Right.
It's one of my favorite cookbooks. I got it at like the bargain basement. Like the bargain books table at Half Price Books.
Right.
And it's one of my favorite cookbooks. It's just a really nice collection of recipes. Now I only make like four or five things out of it, but I really like those things that I make out of it.
We've mentioned it before. We make several. Yeah. Like I said, several different
the spicy moussaka and
the shakshuka.
Shakshuka. I've tried a couple of other dishes that I didn't like as much. Like there's a lamb pasta dish that I wasn't especially fond of.
Yeah. Well, I made one of the first, I think the first dish I made after your surgery, like that night or the next night, I made a recipe out of Cook's Illustrated or Cook's Country cast iron pork fajitas. So it was, it uses pork tenderloin. So it's very tender. And you cook it in cast iron skillets, cast iron pans, because of the heat, I think is the idea. And, you know, so you cook the vegetables and the pork in it, and you're supposed to kind of serve it in the skillet, which I'm not going to do that. I had to use two skillets because I had to double the recipe to serve everyone. And this was a 100% meal. Everybody loved it.
Right. I think the kids generally like the flavors of Mexican food, like they like taco meat, etc.
Right.
But they're not a huge fan of fajitas because they do not like chewy meat.
Right. Because we usually use flank steak and steak fajitas.
Right.
And
I mean, I suppose one could make
chicken fajitas
or like use a sirloin or a really soft, tender steak for fajitas. But
right.
That's not how I roll.
Right. Or shrimp fajitas or something like that. But yeah, I like the flank steak ones myself, but this was really good. it had a really good flavor from the cast iron, and it wasn't like I expected it to be super smoky cooking indoors on cast iron. It really wasn't that bad.
It was kind of smoky, though. Well, it did set off the alarms.
It always sets the alarms off in our house, but it wasn't like the house was full of smoke. When we try to cook meat on, you know, steaks or other like meats on the stovetop in the cast iron skillet, it's like a cloud of smoke. But this wasn't too bad because it cooked so quick. I think that was the key. But I liked the flavors, and it was really good, and the kids all enjoyed it. Totally want to make this again because everybody liked it.
Absolutely. I would like you to make it again when I'm feeling up for eating more of it. I think I had a couple pieces of meat.
Right.
And that was about it.
And then back to, we've had several different things, but another dish that I made yesterday that none of the kids liked was pea soup. So we have like ham, like a big ham several times a year when it's on sale.
Usually around Easter time because that's when it goes on sale.
And then we'll save the bones in the freezer. And so I was digging through the freezer before your surgery. I was kind of going through and see what is in here that that we need to cook. And there were like four big ham bones in there. And I'm like, we have to make pea soup and get rid of some of these. So that's what I did. I made pea soup. I used two of the bones. And it tasted a little... I think freezer burned.
Possibly.
I think that's what it was. The kids generally don't like pea soup anyway, I guess. But I liked it when I was a kid. But
the kids do not like pea soup. A couple of them will politely eat a little bit of it, but they will not go back for seconds or leftovers.
Even Sophie didn't want it. And Sophie usually likes everything.
Right. No, it's not. Bella likes the 15 bean soup.
Right.
But she doesn't really like the pea soup. It's too monotonous.
Right.
But you like pea soup, so I usually make it once a year because you like it. But you don't remember that nobody else likes it because you generally are happy with it.
I thought, I forgot. Anyway, I try to add, it's not uniform. Like, there are chunks. There's potato, this carrot in it, you know, little chunks of it to give it something, some bite in addition to the ham that's in there as well. But there's now 2 quarts of leftover pea soup in the fridge, which gets better over time. It's one of those things that gets better in the fridge overnight. So I had some for lunch today. It was good. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. I don't know what I'm making. I had a semi plan last week for things to make.
Uh-huh.
This week, it's all. I mean, the menus for Thanksgiving week are always wicked tricky. Like, you know, what you're gonna have Thursday. Obviously, you're gonna have turkey. On Friday, we're having turkey soup because that's what we do, right? Although this year, I'm not cutting my finger open while I'm cutting the vegetables.
I'm actually okay with just having plates of leftovers and not turkey soup, but okay.
We could do turkey soup over the weekend or whatever, but
right.
Like, we'll make turkey stock and do something with it. I like the turkey tortilla soup.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Once all the other leftovers are eaten.
Right, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that's the trick. What do we have? And often on Wednesday, we've had pizza.
Right.
The night before Thanksgiving, like, you don't want to be cooking a huge meal because you're cooking a huge meal the next day. So I think maybe we can do pizza.
Yeah, I wonder what other people do.
What do people do on Thanksgiving Eve? You know, do you make another meal? That just seems like a lot. Well, I have to be honest. I'm watching, like, I belong to some Facebook groups of people, you know, cooking Facebook groups. And people are like, for the last 3 weeks, they get a binder. That they have checklists, they start cooking 3 weeks in advance and putting things like that's not us. We'll cook on Thursday.
Also don't ever host like large groups of people.
Nobody's
either.
Hosting large groups of people this year.
Oh, I bet some people are.
Well, ostensibly these people with these huge lists are not hosting big groups. They just like to make their turkey stock out of wings 3 weeks in advance and put them in the freezer so they have fresh turkey stock to make gravy on Thursday instead of just making it from the gravy, the stock that's in the bottom of the roasting pan, that sort of thing. I'm just saying that's fine. Some people really enjoy that. That is not me. I cook on Thanksgiving.
I usually make like the pies a couple days in advance, and I might make bread and cranberry sauce, like, in advance.
Yes,
because
that's true.
Because you can get those out of the way, and then you're not using the oven and the stove.
And they're in the fridge. In fact, the cranberry sauce is probably better if you make it in advance.
Cranberry sauce is better when it's chilled. So yeah, that's usually great a couple days in advance. And
maybe we'll get Bella to do that on Tuesday.
And then making the bread a couple days in advance, always. You can't really make it on Thanksgiving Day because your turkey's in the oven.
Right. Right. So, yeah, some people make rolls, but you prefer challah.
In the past, I did one year I tried to make challah rolls, but it really ended up with everybody having a gigantic roll, which they ate all at once, and they filled up on roll at dinner.
And didn't eat anything else.
And then we didn't have any leftover challah, and then they didn't really have enough room for anything else. So I think one big loaf sliced thin, everybody has one slice with Thanksgiving dinner and has room for other things, and then there's like half a loaf left over for the rest of the week.
Well, there you go.
It works better that way.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, I like the idea of rolls, but in practice, when it doesn't really work out.
Not with five kids. So, yeah. I think you were going to have the girls maybe do the challah.
I was going to try to teach them to make the challah. Now, this is kind of tricky because there's some appointments this week.
Yes.
I'm not even sure actually how I'm going to make them because, like, I'm supposed to be Wednesday morning driving up to the hospital for a checkup with the surgeon. And I'm thinking, I don't think you are going to have time to drive me.
I have a recording.
And I'm not sure I'm going to be up to driving myself. So I might just call them and reschedule that for the week after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Who schedules it the day before Thanksgiving?
But they basically had either this past Thursday, which was not even a week after my surgery, and that he definitely wanted like 7 to 10 days.
Right.
Or like the day before Thanksgiving was the only day this coming week that he had.
And then there's another Lucy one on
Tuesday.
Lucy's
got an appointment, and Sophie's got an appointment on Tuesday morning, which is telehealth, but still, that takes time.
Yeah, but Lucy has an in-person one, right?
Right, on Tuesday afternoon, which again, I might just cancel that and move it. I mean, I don't
reschedule.
Know.
Reschedule, yeah.
Yeah, it seems kind
of crazy.
The poor
thing's been waiting for this appointment, too. So, it's the timing. It's 2020. So we'll figure it out. I got to figure out what to make, though, on Monday night and Tuesday night, because those are both scout nights, and whatever we do has to be fairly easy to be done in time.
Well, you could do the beef stew, just start it early in the morning.
Well, yes, I don't have time to start it early in the morning. Monday, I'm like recording all day and going food shopping, so that's not going to happen on Monday. So I got to figure something out. Well, it'll be something straightforward. I think I might do rice bowls Monday night.
That's
I was thinking
idea.
Of that because we got chicken left over. Anyway,
kids all love rice bowls.
We don't have to, have the whole audience join in on our meal planning.
This is how meal planning works, basically. Though,
yes. What do we got? What can we do? So let's move on then. Let's talk about what we've been reading and watching. Obviously, it's been two weeks. I didn't talk about this with Bella. I didn't want to, like, hey, I've been watching this show where people get killed and, like, all these adult themes. I've been saving up. So.
Right. And I've been reading a lot. Obviously, I have not had much else to do besides sleep, read, and watch shows. I've done some watching, but I've done a lot of reading.
Right. What'd you read?
Well, I went on a Georgette Heyer kick and I read a bunch of her novels, which are fun. And
you mentioned.
Right.
Last time, I think.
I think I mentioned them a couple last time.
Yeah.
So I did a bunch of that. I tried to read Jane Austen's Emma, and then I remembered that Emma is my least favorite Jane Austen heroine. And after about a chapter, I was like, you know what? I don't feel great. And I really don't want to spend time with this character who's annoying. So I skipped that. I picked up a couple books and I kind of put down again for those reasons. I did read one book that I really liked this week, though, which was Sunshine by Robin McKinley, which on a recent Facebook chat when people were talking books, a couple different people recommended it. And I really didn't know anything about it, except I know I've read Robin McKinley's novels in the past and I've liked her. She tends to write fantasy novels. This one was different in that it was more urban fantasy, sort of post-apocalyptic urban fantasy. So it takes place
in a world.
In a world where there are magic users and magical beings who are out in the open, like everybody knows them. There's even a branch of the police force which deals with
magical crimes.
Crimes. Evidently, you're supposed to be registered with the government if you have a magical talent or are part magical being. And the one evil magical being in the world are the enemy are the vampires. There are other magical beings which are kind of can be hostile or can be not hostile, but the vampires are all the bad guys. So the heroine is definitely not magical person, or so she thinks. She is a baker who works at the cafe that her mom's second husband works at. But it turns out that she has magical powers and she gets kidnapped by vampires.
Hmm.
I really liked it. I liked the world building. I really liked the character, another first-person narrator. I think I'm going to have to get over my categorical dislike of first-person narrators because I've run into it done well quite often of late. Anyway, I highly recommend it's gory and it's
vampires.
It's dark. It's vampires. So if you can't handle with like vampires being dismembered and blown into bits, this is not the book for you. But if you don't mind that, I thought it was less morally unpleasant than a lot of vampire stories. It was good, but definitely for mature audiences, not one I would hand to.
Not for kids.
Not for kids. Even for teens who think that they like dark and spooky things, this is probably a little bit heavy for that and with some adult themes and content.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I read a couple of other books, but I'm not thinking of them off the top of my head. Anyway,
okay.
I've been watching a bunch of episodes of Endeavor, which continues to be an excellent TV show. And I watched...
It's a British crime.
British crime. It's sort of the backstory for Inspector Morse, which was evidently a long-running British crime series. I never watched Inspector Morse, but Endeavor is set in the 60s. And I like it.
Cool.
I also watched Captain America.
Captain America, yes.
Which was the first time I've seen it. It was good. I was a little bit out of it for parts of it. But that's kind of... It's a perfect movie for watching when you're a little bit out of it because, you know, action-adventure movies are great for... I'm not doing a great job of following exactly what's going on.
A lot of stuff's blowing up and guys flying through the air.
Right. Lots of stuff blowing up. I have had the ambition to try to fill in the cracks in my Marvel universe knowledge so that I can eventually watch Avengers and be caught up with everybody else in the world, but I'm not there yet. I have a lot more to go.
I was just explaining to Melanie before we started the differences between Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel, and just Marvel. Those are three different people in comic books.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm helping her on that.
Yeah, but good. I mean, they're good, fun stuff blow up.
Yeah, stuff blow up, bad guys get
bad
punched.
Guys.
I mean,
and this
bad
one,
guys are Nazis. I mean, what do you know? What right. you got?
I liked the fact that this one was a period piece set predominantly in World War II.
Right.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Well, see, I've been watching a bunch of stuff while you were out of it, and so I watched, I've got a BritBox subscription, mainly for classic Doctor Who, for the Secrets of Doctor Who podcast, and I've always felt like I'm not using it enough. There's all this British shows that are really good, and I don't think to go and look at it for stuff, so I finally decided, look, here's one they keep pushing called A Confession, starring Martin Freeman. A.K.A. Bilbo.
What's not to like about Martin Freeman?
Holmes. Dr. Watson.
Dr. Watson.
I mean, but from, Sherlock. Right. But anyway, everyone knows Martin Freeman. Not Morgan Freeman, which is a totally different show. I always confuse the names. So It's a based on a true story about a young woman who was murdered. It's a British crime mystery story. I mean, what else is there, right? All British TV shows are apparently about.
I really read a really funny piece recently about like murders in Britain and how like everybody's so incredibly polite because you never know who the person sitting next to you is a mass murderer because there are so many British crime shows.
Right.
And novels like yes. British people are.
The British are fascinated
bumped off left and right.
Yes. By murder mysteries. Anyway, this is based on a true story and it's about a young woman who was murdered. I think I kind of spoiled a little bit. You find out fairly early on. It's 6 episodes. And by this second or third episode, it's a true story. So, you know, she's murdered. Okay. Anyway, it's the story of really the police inspector, the detective inspector who chases down the case, who doesn't give up on it, but who ends up suffering as a result of it. He suffers from the politics of it, the internal police politics, the politics of the of crime in Britain.
Sounds kind of like Broadchurch.
It's a little bit like Broadchurch, which is ironic given well, no, it's not actually all that related. I mean, never mind. It's the British film community, TV community, it's small and they're all interrelated. But it is somewhat similar. There are some surface similarities, but this is, again, a true story. And it shows some of the flaws in British policing, apparently, in the justice system that this case exposed and how this cop did, like everyone agrees, he did all the right things, but in the end, it kind of blows back on him a bit. And I don't want to say too much more because
it would be very easy to spoil that.
I don't want to spoil it, but it was well worth it, especially because they never went to the cliches. So there's two moms involved, and there's two young women involved in it. I don't want to spoil it, but how they treat the two moms differently, and they're not just, you know, the grieving mom and she placed all the cliches of the grieving moms, you know, the moms who looking for their daughters. Like, it doesn't play to the cliches as much.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it, and it was very interesting how they played them out differently. So it was good. I really do recommend it. It was good. Something very different, non-fiction, totally. That was, of course, a drama about a true story, but completely non-fictional on Disney Plus. I've been watching, and I just finished it, National Geographic's, actually, I haven't finished yet. I think there's one or two episodes left, a series called A Gathering Storm. And it basically follows the 2019 tropical storm season in both the Atlantic and the Pacific. They handed out, they say, at 3 times throughout the each episode, they say that they handed out 1,000 cameras to sailors and Coast Guardsmen, sailor, you know, all that sort of stuff throughout the Atlantic and Pacific in those regions. And then I guess they also sent camera crews up because they have professional recording stuff to kind of follow people in the storms as they occurred. And so it was interesting to see the first person perspective, and you had like fishermen and merchant marine and Navy and Coast Guard and, you know, all the different perspectives. And it's interesting. There's a bit of an annoyance where the narrator, it's not Mike Rowe. It should always be Mike Rowe who narrates, or Morgan Freeman. But but this narrator has this strange affect where he over enunciates all of his consonants really, really strongly. And it's very distracting. But it's pretty good series. It suffers from some of the things that a lot of nonfiction sciencey shows do, which is to repeat themselves over and over again. Like, even though there aren't commercial breaks, they still pause where a commercial break would be and then repeat themselves as they come back from it. It's really weird.
It's like the writers don't know how to write for not commercial TV,
or they put it in case that at some point this will also be on commercial TV or something. I don't know. It's weird. It's a format and they're just stuck to it or something. And then I watched something else. Just one more thing. which Jen Fulweiler's Naughty Corner. Now, Jen Fulweiler is someone we know. She's a Catholic mom from Texas who we knew, we've known for years now, right? Like,
right.
15 years? Back to the 2000s? More than 10 years.
I think Bella was a baby when we met her.
Right.
Or a toddler.
Yeah, so more than 10 years. And she had a blog. It was originally called Etu Jen. She was an atheist who became Catholic.
Right.
And when we would go to visit your parents in Austin, the first time we went down, we did a blogger meetup. So that's where we met the Darwins of the Darwin Catholic blog. And we met Jen and...
Several others.
And we kept in touch. And Jen has gone on to have this career where she was a radio host on the Sirius XM channel, Catholic channel, which she's since left. But she now has a podcast. She became a stand-up comedian. She did this tour, a comedy tour that got recorded and is now on Amazon Prime. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you can watch it for free. The Naughty Corner. So, I mean... Power to it. Congratulations, Jen. I mean, this is what a cool thing that you've got to do. It's Catholic mom humor.
Kind of like Jim Gaffigan, if Jim Gaffigan was a mom instead of a dad.
Kinda. Although a little bit more. It wasn't like just Catholic stuff, but right. Yeah. No, like it was. I think she didn't lean heavily on the Catholic stuff. In fact,
but I don't think Jim Gaffigan really leans heavily on.
No, that's what I'm trying to compare to. So yeah, I think. I mean, if Jim Gaffigan hadn't dove off the deep end this past summer, but that's a whole other issue. I don't want to get into that one. It was good. It was a funny thing is I saw. In the audience, you know how they do the audience reaction shots?
Uh-huh.
I saw someone I recognized. Father Daryl Millett from Saskatchewan was in the audience. He had traveled to be there. I think it was the Chicago show because the Spirit Juice Studios folks recorded it and they're located in Chicago. So that must be who it is.
Interesting.
I know the Spirit Juice guys from like Rob Kazmark from SQPN's when we did the Catholic New Media conferences.
Right.
I met Rob at those. So just small world of Catholic media.
Small Catholic world, media world.
But, you know, congratulations, Jen. I mean, that's so great. I know she's been working hard to get there. My favorite parts were the parts where she's talking about Joe and traveling.
Uh-huh.
Like, Joe is the type of dad who, like, when he travels, he travels like he's a refugee, like he's escaping from persecution. You don't stay anywhere two nights in a row. You only travel at night. You travel light. It's really funny. That was good. And then for reading, I just finished a book, a novella by Brandon Sanderson in his Stormlight Archive series. Brandon Sanderson's like a machine. This guy, he publishes like 7 or 8 different works a year in like, three different whole, you know, complete different series that he's writing. I mean, the guy is amazing. And so because this novella called Dawn Shard precedes the third book in the archive, and these books are huge. This one's called The Rhythm of War, I think it's called. So very good, amazing world building. You talk about world building. The first book, The Way of Kings, I've mentioned it before on the show. It took me a bit to get into it because it's somewhat complex. But once I did, wow, really amazing. So highly recommend it. I really enjoy them.
I think I'll hold off on that until I'm feeling better because right now, complexity is not my friend. I actually picked up another book last night and I'm thinking this is really slow getting started. And I don't know that I have the patience for slow right now.
Well, I just finished the two short story collections from the Dresden Files from Jim Butcher. And now all I've got left are the two novels that, you know, the pair of novels that he published this year, this summer. And I'm like, I'm holding off. Like, I don't like I've read all of the novels, like 16 of them or something like that. 14 plus the two short story collections. I started those in July. So I've sped through those pretty darn quick.
Right.
And I'm like, but it was like 5 years since his last novel and the one he published. I don't want to wait 5 years to get like, I mean, maybe it's not going to be 5 years again, but it's going to be maybe 2 years or a year at least. And I'm like, I don't want to like rush through these. I'm going to kind of say, hold those for a couple months and then read them.
A couple months.
Maybe. We'll see.
In the grand scheme of things, does a couple months really make that much difference?
No.
Compared to like 5 years.
I know. And if I finish them, I can join the online conversations about them, I guess, which is what you're waiting for me to finish them so you can talk about them, right?
Well, yeah.
All right. Well, I just started a new Tom Clancy novel, Jack Ryan novel, and I've got the Rhythm of War to read. So I'll read those and then I'll do those. The Dresden File. Or I could finish the Jack Ryan and then read.
It's okay. You can do whatever you want.
You can see how that goes. Anyway, so that's what I've been reading and watching and what you've been reading and watching. All right. So the only other thing I think I have on my list of things to talk about was we wanted to talk about Raniero Canta la Mesa. And you brought this up because you can kind of out of it. So you haven't been paying attention to Vatican news, that sort of thing. But so Raniero Canta la Mesa is.
He's the.
The preacher to the papal household.
Right. He's the Pope's preacher. He's the person who the priest who has the faculties to preach to the Pope.
Right. He leads their retreats when they have the papal household has retreats, et cetera, et cetera.
He also has done the sermons, retreats, meditations, whatever you call them, for the conclave of cardinals.
Right. That's also in that job description.
Yeah. Right. So when the cardinals get together to elect a pope, Father Canta la Mesa is the one who's like giving them the encouraging.
Right. And he's been
meditations.
He's been doing this for decades. Like he did this for John Paul. He did this for Benedict. And now he's still doing it for Francis. And he's a Franciscan. He's a OFM. Is he a Capuchin?
I think so.
I forgot to look.
I've read several of his books and I've read quite a few of his sermons just like online. And I've always really appreciated his writing.
Yeah, he is a Capuchin. And I think I remember hearing him speak or seeing him preach at Steubenville when I was there back in the 90s.
That would make sense since they're Franciscans.
Yes. And in fact, I think he's the one had the story where when John Paul was elected, I think he's old enough for this, where he was just a regular friar. But after that, the election, he was in that night. He stood underneath the windows of the papal apartments and jumping up and down, yelling at the top of his lungs, "Coraggio, John Paul, John Pablo, whatever, John Paolo, Giovanni Paolo, coraggio, courage, have courage," you know. The story goes, I don't know how true it is, that when John Paul heard this, he said, "Find that priest and make him the preacher to the papal household," or something along those lines.
Okay, I really want that story to be true. Because that's an awesome story.
Yes. It says he was appointed to this office in 1980. So he's been doing this for 40 years.
Okay, that makes me feel old.
So the reason we're talking about him now is that
Pope Francis named him a cardinal.
He named him to the College of Cardinals. This most recent consistory earlier this month in that list, he named him to the College of Cardinals. And that's unusual because he's not a bishop, of a diocese. So
he's not a bishop at all.
Right. So it's unusual, but it's not unheard of or unprecedented. In every conclave, every consistory, they always appoint a couple who aren't sitting bishops.
I liked the fact that I read an interview with him where he's talked about he found out when he was like watching the Pope speak.
Yeah, he wasn't told ahead of time.
In the audience, he wasn't told ahead of time, and he would have thought that the Pope was talking about someone else, except for the fact that his name is so unusual. He would have just assumed, like, if his name had been, John Smith, he would have assumed it was another John Smith, because he did not at all expect to be named a cardinal.
Well, what makes this case so significant is he is asked for the dispensation from the requirement to be ordained a bishop, because that's usually what happens is a cardinal is technically a member of the clergy of Rome. They're the closest to the cardinal. That's why they're pastors. They have titular churches. They become pastors of churches in Rome, but they also become bishops of dioceses around Rome that are titular dioceses. They don't have actual duties of running things there. And that's how they become. That's why they have the ability to elect the Bishop of Rome. That's what they're doing, is they're electing the Bishop of Rome, technically. And the Bishop of Rome, by definition, is the Pope. So the people of Rome, the bishops of Rome elect, or the pastors of Rome elect the Bishop of Rome, that sort of thing. Anyway, he asked for dispensation from being named a bishop. And because
he said he wanted to die as a simple Franciscan, wearing his habit, and he did not really. He said he understood the position as being a shepherd and fisherman, and he said he could be a shepherd just as easily as a friar as he could bishop.
Here's the quote. He said, "The office of a bishop is to be a shepherd and a fisherman. At my age, there's little I can do as a shepherd, but on the other hand, what I can do as a fisherman is to keep proclaiming the word of God." And he said he wants to shun all signs of a higher office, preferring to be laid to rest upon his death in the robes of a Franciscan.
I love the humility. I also really love the memento mori, how do I want to die?
Right.
Which is, especially in this month of November, I have a friend who just had a birthday, and she got for her birthday a memento mori coffee mug and a memento mori ring with a little skull on it. So I've been thinking about that, the idea that a Christian's job is to contemplate death. I really liked the way he was sort of contemplating his own death.
Well, and he's not young either. He's how old is he? It doesn't say. I lost the page where his Wikipedia page, but yeah, he's up there. So, and he's not the only non-bishop who was named. Let's see, Father Enrico Ferrucci, who was a priest in Rome for 56 years. He's known for serving the poor as the former director of Rome's Caritas. So that's why he's being named cardinal. And then Father Mario Gambetti is a 55-year-old conventual Franciscan and former custos of the Sacred Convent of Assisi. So he's going to become a bishop in Assisi. There's no judgment on them for becoming bishop. That's part of the office. They're accepting right. That role. I don't know if that means. Does it mean Father Cantalamessa can or cannot vote for Pope?
No, he can.
Because he's not a bishop.
Because he's a cardinal. But he's a cardinal. He's a member of the College of Cardinals.
Right.
Just, he's not taking on the role of bishop. Which is interesting. My friend who's a medievalist points out that this is very medieval, the idea of having members of the College of Cardinals who aren't bishops. In fact, technically, you don't have to be a ordained priest in order to be a member of the College of Cardinals.
Technically. And technically, the College of Cardinals doesn't have to be the mechanism by which we get a Bishop of Rome. That has been the way we've gotten a Bishop of Rome has varied throughout history and has happened in many different ways. The first one was not elected by the cardinals. It was appointed by by the Lord. But some have been appointed by kings or emperors. A few were acclaimed by acclamation of the people of Rome.
The people of Rome grabbed somebody and said, "You're the next bishop."
Pope Gregory the Great he was just a simple priest who
he was a monk.
Who was the one? It was Hildebrand. His name was Hildebrand, and he was after Sylvester. I'm trying to think if it was it was one of the Gregories, seventh.
Okay, not Gregory the Great.
Not Gregory the Great. It might have been Gregory the Seventh or Sixth. Anyway, but he was at the funeral for the previous pope. He was grabbed by the crowd and carried bodily to the throne and set upon it. And that was that. The people of Rome have spoken. So it can happen.
Honestly, I'm rather charmed by some of the great stories of saints who are sort of declared bishops by popular acclamation.
Right.
Of course, there's Ambrose of Milan. Was it Ambrose? Who was a catechumen? He hadn't even been baptized.
Right.
At the time. But it was at the time of the Arian heresy, and the city was so
beset by the heresy.
Split.
Yeah.
And he was a catechumen, so he was...
Hadn't even been baptized.
Hadn't even been baptized, but he was in process of becoming a Christian, and he was a military leader, I think.
But he was so well-spoken, such a great leader.
And he was such already. A great peacemaker that people said, we want him as right. our bishop. So they had to baptize him, ordain him as a priest.
Well, baptized, confirmation, ordination, episcopal ordination. It was, yeah, that was pretty quick.
Yeah.
So Father Cantalamessa is actually 86, so he will not be voting in the next conclave. So as expected, like if he's been in that office for 40 years, I'm not surprised that he's of an advanced age. So but that is good. That's a good story. All right, we should wrap things there. We want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Ned G, Chris G, James L, Lee H, and Drew M. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets in all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. If you have any feedback on our discussion, you can let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And I'll have links to the different shows and books that we had talked about in our show notes on sqpn.com. If you haven't yet done so, make sure you're subscribed in Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or on the SQPN YouTube channel, where you should make sure to hit the bell to get notifications. Until next time, I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.